Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Why don't you tell me just really briefly kind of like what you do and how you got into doing it?
Okay, what I do. Well, you know that I've got a group, the Tudors, and we go all around the country to these fabulous houses, these stately homes and castles, and bring history to life at these places by dressing in a Tudor costume, showing, I mean, it's more for the children. I mean, adults love it as well. But it's more for the children to get them interested. Because if we spark a little bit of interest in a child and make that child want to learn more about the Tudors, then we've done our job, you know. So we really enjoy bringing history to life at these places. It's a great joy. Also, I mean, I've always been fascinated with Tudor costume. Mm. And... Henry, that's enough. He's revving a car. I can't believe he's revving a car.
No.
So, I mean, the Tudor costume. I've always been fascinated with Tudor costume. Mm. And I've always been sewing. So I combined the two, my love of history, my love of the Tudor costume, and then brought the sewing into it. Because, I do love sewing. I'm not an expert, I wouldn't say, by any stretch of the imagination, and there's a lot of seamstresses who are magnificent, but you know, I've been sewing now for many years, and I take my patterns from portraiture, try and get as close to the actual portrait as I possibly can, and it you know, my dresses are
they're
fabulous.
Yeah, they are.
I've got an exhibition at Barclay Castle running at the moment, and that's running until the 1st of October. Mm. From there, it's going to the Mary Rose Museum. So my group and myself are actually tutoring at the Mary Rose Museum in October and in December as well. So really looking forward to that. So I've got loads lined up to do. I mean, we've got to keep our history alive, you know, and the children are the future historians.
Yeah.
So we need to keep it going.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Yeah. So tell me about getting dressed as a tutor. Tell me how tutors got dressed.
Okay. How tutors got dressed. Well, first of all, you know, they were naked.
Right.
They were, you know, we're talking about the royal Tudors now, they'd have ladies in waiting who'd come and they'd wash them down, oil the skin, make sure they were clean, because people have got this sort of illusion that all Tudors were filthy, and that's not the case. I mean, in Port Palace, they had hot and cold running water, which is like amazing, you know, for the Tudor times. Then the ladies in waiting would be four or five ladies in waiting, they'd start, they'd put on a shift, which is like a little nightdress. Mm-hmm. After the shift, they'd put on the petticoat, which usually was made out of red wool, because apparently red was the colour of religion, and it would protect you from disease, so a red petticoat was a really good idea. After that, they put my favourite piece on, which is a bum roll, which is the only time I've ever got a bottom. And that gave a beautiful shape to the skirt and showed all the fabulous pleating in the back of the your kirtle and your overgown. After the bum roll, then you put on your kirtle, and that's the piece of clothing that's got the fabulous fabric at the front, all very decorative fabric, and around the lower edge of the back train of the kirtle. Also the piece that's got all the jewelling around the neck as well. So that would go on, it's all laced up. After that, they put on the overgown. It's obviously the part that you see, the full gown that you see, and that was laced up. Then they pin on the placard, which is the bit that goes across the front of the gown. After that, they put on the sleeves, which were separate from the gown, and tied those on inside the sleeve of the overgown. And then you put your jewellery on, and your hat was the French hood or gable hood or whatever. So it was a long, drawn-out process. But, I mean, I've done it many, many times in exhibitions and demonstrations, and the end result's beautiful, so it's well worth all the hassle.
And how long does it take you to get dressed when you do it?
Well, when I do it, it usually takes between half an hour, three quarters of an hour. If you're really in a rush and have to do it very, very quickly, you can cut that down to a bare minimum of, like, 25 minutes. But that's, like, a real rush. But back in the day, back in the 16th century, it would have been quite a long, drawn-out process. It would have taken about an hour and a half. And, you know, you've got to bear in mind as well that a lady would perspire, and so she'd be changing her shift, which is the undergarment next to her skin, a few times a day to stay fresh and to stop the clothes from smelling like, you know, sweaty. So you'd have to go through that process a few times a day, and that's a lot. I mean, it makes you realise, you know, leggings and a sweatshirt doesn't look as feminine, but my God, they're a lot more, you know, easy to wear. So.
Yeah. What are the materials, like, that the shift would have been made out of? And you mentioned some of, like, the wool and things, but what kind of materials are we talking about?
The thing that the garment that was closer to you made out of a very, very fine linen or silk. I mean, I've got them made out of both fabrics, linen and silk, because they're both natural fabrics and do wick away any perspiration from your body. They keep you warm in the winter and cool in the summer, and that's what you need, you know. You need a fabric that's going to be conducive in both weathers. So I think very fine linen or silk.
Yeah. And then can you tell me like how fashions changed from during the century? Because there were a lot of, I would think, advances with trade and things like that. Would colours have changed or anything?
Well, you've got to think, I mean, you know, the 16th century was a time when we were discovering new places, new continents. Yeah. There were people coming abroad, and obviously in different countries you've got different fashions. So they're different, really. Yeah. Today, I mean, we get a lot of fashions from Milan and Paris that come over to England, and we sort of adapt them to what we want them to be, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was the same in those days. I mean, they used to go, like, Anne of Cleves, for instance, she came over from Cleves, and she had a different style, a more Burgundian type style of gown, different headwear and what have you, and there were different aspects of her fashion sort of drawn into the English fashion as well. The same with the French court, with Anne Boleyn. Sure. You know, a lot of the French fashions became even more fashionable in England when Anne Boleyn sort of was in the king's favour and then became queen. So not a lot has really changed since then, fashion-wise. I mean, you know, Anne Boleyn in her day was what Princess Diana was to us with fashion, you know. So I wouldn't say that things have changed that much fashion-wise. You've always got your icons, Anne Boleyn was the icon of her day with her fashion from the French court, and Princess Diana was an icon with her fashion as well. So, sure. You know, we always look to sort of aspire to be these fabulous sort of icons and virtues of womanhood. And, you know, we take the best fashion-wise and the way they are and try to aspire to be like them. Yeah. I think it still happens today.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, let's say we're still talking about Anne over 500 years
later. We are.
Something.
We are. It's true. So I'm curious about, you mentioned the different countries, and like Catherine of Aragon had that gabled hood, and then Anne Boleyn had the French hood. Can you tell me about like the headwear too?
Well, I mean, people say that, you know, Anne Boleyn brought the French to England, which is total bunkum. Catherine of Aragon did wear the French hood long before Anne Boleyn was ever got into the king's favour, you know. Mm-hmm. So the French hood was worn by Catherine of Aragon, mm-hmm. and Anne Boleyn wore a gable hood as well. There's portraits of Anne Boleyn, many portraits wearing the gable hood. So these different types of headwear were actually at the English court. Anne Boleyn did make it more in vogue.
Mm-hmm.
She became the consort to the King of England, you know, because everyone wanted to be like the chosen girl of the time, you know, and they did copy that more so when Anne Boleyn was queen. But yeah, Catherine of Aragon did wear the French hood, and Anne Boleyn wore the gable, and vice versa, you know. So they both sort of took the turns in wearing the different headwear. But I think the picture of Catherine of Aragon, you see more portraiture of her in the gable hood, and it's the large sort of dog kennel gable, whereas the Anne Boleyn gable hood that she wore was more fitted to the face, and I think a lot more complementary to the shape of the face as well than the big gable hood.
Interesting. What's one kind of, do you have a favorite, I don't know, was there like a trend that you look at that was during the 16th century that, you know, you could say like, I don't know, with us like the 80s and neon or something, like, was there any kind of like trends during that time that you look at that you really especially like?
I think the French style of gown is my favorite. I just love the cut of it. I love the back pleating of it. Everything about it to me screams femininity. It is a nightmare to wear because there's a lot going on with the French court gown. But I think for the cut of it and the actual finished look, I think it's absolutely spectacular. I'm actually making one at the moment in green, which is, it's been an absolute nightmare to make, let me tell you, because it's very, very heavy velvet, but it's emerald green. I'm doing the Tudor Tapestry tour with Alison Weir, so I want to get it finished for that. So I can wear for the demonstration for that. So, but it's absolutely stunning. It's a stunning gown. But I'm just finishing the detailing on the kirtle, the jewelling on the kirtle. So my fingers are shot at the moment. It'll work.
Yeah,
it's a nightmare, but I will get it for the time. I will get it. But they take so long to make, though. You know, it's like it's not. And get it done in a month. I mean, these gowns take forever to make. I mean, I'm just doing a petticoat at the moment, and as you say, I don't know if you can see, but it's all hands.
Oh wow.
This thing's all hand sewn, and I've only got that far with it at the minute.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
I've got the skirt to put on. That's going to be fun, isn't it?
That's amazing.
Well, I'll get it.
Yeah.
But it's with when he's white. I can't do any sewing.
Yeah.
Do you know, if this was a bit after death, and that's no lie, you know, because I've got to wait till he goes to sleep, and then get some fabric out and do a little bit of cutting out and a little bit of sewing and And then, you know, he's away before you know where you are. And by that time, I'm exhausted. So when he goes off to school, I'll go to sleep, you know. So after mummy jobs, that is.
Right.
But it's a long job. It's a long, hard thing making a gown. But when it's finished, it's so worth it. Mm. I mean, it's just to be able to see them. And it's like with the girls in my group as well, you know, when they're all dressed fabulous and I see them walk around, and it brings me a tremendous amount of pride to see them, and when people admire them and what have you. It's a lovely feeling. It really is a lovely feeling.
Yeah.
Same with the exhibition at Buckley Castle, you know, you see all these costumes and you walk in and think, wow. And they think, oh my God, I made those. Yeah. You know, it's like... It's just so surreal going from someone who was so enraptured with the Tudor dynasty to being somebody who's actually involved with the recreation of these beautiful pieces. You know, it's just a dream come true for me. It really is, and I'm very blessed by God to have the capability of being able to do that.
Mm. Wow! Congratulations. That's so beautiful.
Lovely of you to say.
Can you tell me about, you mentioned how long the gowns take to make. Do you know anything about like how people shopping? So like how did people actually get their clothing? Like noble women, I wouldn't assume made their own. They had people to do it. But like what did that process look like?
Right. Well, I mean, it's the same really as any kind of shopping. In those days, people would come to, say, the castle with swatches of fabrics and show the, you know, the lady of the house or whatever, the swatches of fabrics, you know, and they'd have a look at the colours because, I mean, there was a vast variety of colours that we weren't, back in those days, they weren't restricted. If you had the money, you could, it's the same, you've got the money, you can get anything. You can get a horse in a hoop skirt if you want, you know what I mean? And it was, same in those days, you know. Like I say, not a lot's changed, you know. So the majority of colours of fabrics and the fabrics themselves, like damasks and satins and silks, they could get. So they'd come, they'd show, you know, the peddler would come or the merchant would come with the different fabrics, show them the fabrics. If they liked the fabric, then they would buy the fabric. And they'd have seamstresses who would make up the gowns to their specification. So it wouldn't be very much different to us going to, you know, whichever shop and buying fabric that we wanted and then making it ourselves. You know, it's not that much different. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the fact is they had servants to make their clothes for. They didn't have to sit and sew them.
Yeah. They recycled a lot of clothes, didn't they? Like, because of the expensive fabric, didn't even like noble people kind of recycle their clothing and keep using the expensive cloths?
But the beauty with the cloth as well, I mean, the kirtles underneath these gowns are interchangeable. So you could have one over and three, four different kirtles to go underneath, which would make the gown look totally different because they'd be different colours, different fabric. So these gowns, you know, you get a lot of different. I mean, I do it myself with my gowns.
Yeah.
You know, I use the same over gown and use different kirtles, and it changes the whole look of the gown.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting.
You know, it's this horses for courses that what they did then, we do now, because it's all the same kind of items. Mm-hmm. You know, different sleeves, different kirtles, and you just change those and keep the same over gown. So you could have a lot of different costumes using the same over gown, different colored kirtles and sleeves and headwear, of course.
Yeah. And so when you, knowing so much about fashion, when you watch period TV, like the Tudors or something, what do you do?
Don't even get me started, please. I mean, you watch them and there's so many mistakes, but what you've got to realize is these programs like the Tudors and Rain, you know, I mean, there's so many mistakes them, but they're getting the man on the street interested in history. Okay, it's not 100%. You know, well, it's not even half of that. Some of it, you know, correct, but it's getting them interested.
Sure.
And anything that will get interested in history is all right in my book, because that makes them want to know more. And then they'll pick up a book, hopefully, read something about history, get onto one of the channels, like, you know, History Hit, which has, like, proper history.
Yeah.
And it just makes people inquisitive and curious, and they want to know more. So, you know, rock on with all these programs. The costumes may not be historically accurate, but they've done history a while ago because people are watching them and wanting to know more. So, you know, say that they're doing a bad thing.
No, absolutely. But you are the fashion expert. So what can you tell me, like, for somebody who doesn't know, like, what are the main things that you see and you say, I wish it was like this? Or,
well, the fabrics, you know, a lot of fabrics. You don't have gold lamé in Tudor times.
Okay.
You know, you had cloth of gold, which is a total thing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of fabric trimmings that aren't as they would have been in the day. You would have, you know, the fact that the dress is a one piece, there's no placard, lacing. These are things that you have had back in the day. The pinning, Wolf Hall were fabulous, I've got to say, because they had the placards pinned. They used proper pins, which you would have done back in the day. But I suppose when you think about it as well, you've got to think about the health and safety aspect. And you've got actors and actresses, and they're doing what they do. And it would be a bit of a liability using pins in case they cut themselves or got caught or got stabbed with the pin. And I know I've been stabbed with a pin many, many times, so I do know it's not a pleasant experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, make it look as authentic as they can without it being authentic. So that takes some...
Sure.
You know, I've made gowns myself, which are theatrical gowns. They're not historically accurate.
Yeah.
And you just try and look as authentic as you can without having all the authentic bits like the pinning, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the dresses that I make for my group are HA. They're all hand-sewn and goodness knows what else. So a lot of work goes... but these people who don't want the HA, they want the look, but they don't want all the polite with them. And that's what, you know, that's what you do. For if people don't want all the palaver, then you make something that looks right but actually isn't historic.
So just real quick, I have to ask you, because you mentioned the pinnings, what did people use to, like, there weren't zippers, so what did people use to keep things closed?
Well, they used, they had hand sewn on. So, you know, you get your eyelets on your gowns.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they would hand sew them and lace up. For the front of the gown, they'd use ladder lacing, which would just entail one lace, which would lace through all the, and that would keep the front of your gown. And then the pins, I mean, you've heard of a husband giving his wife pin money.
Yeah.
And that comes back when if you didn't have pins to put your gown, you couldn't get dressed.
So
that's where the old adage comes, giving your wife pin money. So you could buy pins so you could dress yourself properly. And that comes in the day when pins were used.
That's so great. That's great. Is there anything else you want to say? Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, my thing is the costume and the bringing history to life. I mean, important for us, you know, women love costume.
Yeah.
They love costume. And this is why, you know, with the exhibition and things, it's gone down seriously well.
Mm-hmm.
Because women always flock to the gowns. I don't know what it is. I mean, I do it myself when I went to the V&A and I was looking at all the fabulous costumes and I'm up in heaven, you know what I mean? And you can see them and the children love all the costumes as well. I don't know whether it's the colours or the jewels, they're like little magpies, you know, they love all the jewels. And it's lovely to watch, and you can actually see them dress building.
Yeah.
So when you actually stand in front, like I do, the dressing of the Tudor Queen, where I'll show step by step all the different parts of getting dressed, mm-hmm. how a Tudor Queen would have been dressed.
Yeah.
And all the little children sit down, and the mums and dads are all sat there as well. And it's amazing to watch the little faces with all these different parts of the costume. Mm-hmm. And they're so in with what's going on, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. think little ones of like 5 and 6 years old, their attention spans are very, very short. They'd be wanting to do other things, but not at all. I mean, the little ones who came and they was watching were sat there till the very, very end. And one of the mummies actually came up to me and said, my daughter said it was stunning. And this is a tiny little girl.
Yeah.
But oh my goodness, well, what? If a little tot of that age has enjoyed it, then be doing something. The fact that, you know, they see the costumes and they listen to how a queen was dressed in those days, and then they want to know about, you know, the queen, Anne Boleyn. And I remember a little boy came up to me, and he was only a tot. I think he must have been only about heart's age, about 8 years old. And he came up and he said, when we go home, do you die?
Because he thought you were Anne Boleyn.
He'd listened to the story of Anne Boleyn.
Yeah.
And he was trying to warn me, you know, in his own way. And I thought, well, he's got a hot story there, you know, he's just got to work on it a little bit. But I mean, things with children, it's their imagination. And I think that's a wonderful thing, because a child's imagination is awakened, and they do want to know more. And this is what we've got to do. We've got to teach children about the love of history, really get them involved and make it fun for them. You know, I mean, there's so many, many groups that do a magnificent job with the what have you. But what you've got to remember is you've got to keep it as authentic as possible, but still make it fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I try to keep my group as authentic as I can, but I'm, you know, we take authenticity to a certain level. I mean, we don't speak it in Latin, you know, or we don't speak in Old English so that people can't understand what we're saying. I mean, we're all quite capable of doing that. But the fact of the matter is, we want to involve people with what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want them to feel as though we're unapproachable.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be very approachable, and I want people to be able to come up to me and ask me questions, especially the children.
Mm-hmm.
So if you make yourself sort of unapproachable, then that is not a good thing, especially in what we do. You've got to be very, very approachable so people can come and ask you questions if they want to.
Sure.
And that, I think that's really important, Heather. I really do. You know, and all these groups that do the reenactment, I mean, God bless them. You know, they're doing a fantastic job, and we need more of them. We really do. Get the word out. Get the word out there.
Yeah. Such wise words. So where can people learn more about you? Tell me where people can find you, like online and then in person and all of that.
I'm the Tudor Dreams Historical Costumier on Facebook.
Okay.
And I'm, you know, I answer questions when I can, when I've got a little bit of time. And I love getting, you know, new faces on my Facebook page. It's always great to have a chat. And they can find me there or on Twitter as well. I'm on Twitter, Tudor Dreams, Gina Clark. And it's, you know, you can find me there, which is great. If you're coming over to England in the near future, you know, come and see the exhibition at Barclay Castle. That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
That's running till the 1st of October, and then it's going to the Mary Rose Museum.
Right.
So it couldn't go anywhere better, you know.
That's awesome.
I'm really excited about it, you know.
Yeah.
So, and it's gone so well. I'm so pleased with the way it's gone.